This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm superstar Frank Morano. Thanks for listening. Going to talk with Debbie Schlussel in a little bit. Obviously going to get her opinion on what's going on in the Middle East, but I'm also going to get her to weigh in on a few other items in the news. And certainly she's got some movie reviews for us, so I'm looking forward to checking those out. Meantime, there are a lot of people that need to be called out. There are a lot of people that need to be reproached. You know, it was I ran into a judge last night. We were having dinner, and you know, he's a close friend. He was a friend of mine long before he was a judge, and he's asking me what's on the show tonight. And he I said, well, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that, we got denunciations. And he said, oh, who are you gonna denounce? And I mentioned a couple of people, and he said, you should denounce Iran. And I said, well, you realize they're being bombed right now. They have missiles being dropped on them right now. He says, yeah, but a denunciation, that would really stick it to them. So that's the power of a denunciation, at least in the United States. People believe that a denunciation potentially stings even more than a Stinger missile. Let's get started and see who's on the list this week.
The Other Side of Midnight presents Denunciations.
Let me begin by denouncing CBS. This was crazy. So there was this highly anticipated special of Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden. The 100th Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden. And they abruptly ended during Piano Man. This is the Heidi Bowl all over again. CBS, so near the end of this very anticipated special, the 100th, Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden, the greatest arena run of all time, the network abruptly cut away to local news as Billy Joel was singing the final chorus of his iconic Piano Man. I mean, this left viewers fuming. As you might imagine, one person took to Twitter saying, CBS has been promoting the Billy Joel concert special every 2 minutes for weeks. So what better way to air it than to preempt it for a half hour and cut him off mid-Piano Man? I don't know how something like this happens. Honestly, this was a ratings potential extravaganza for them. This was something that they had been promoting, as that user said, for a long time. And they just cut him off for local news. Made no sense. So they did apologize, and apparently they're going to re-air it, I think, this weekend in its entirety. But I just don't know how a mistake like that is made. CBS, I do denounce you. Normally, if you're too drunk to drive, giving someone else your keys and asking them to drive would be the responsible thing to do. And I would be praising you instead of denouncing you. But not in this case. Not in this case. Not in the case of LaTonta Mayus Gale. LaTonta Mayus Gale was too drunk to drive. So she allowed her 8-year-old to drive her car home. That's right. An 8-year-old was found driving a car in downtown St. Louis on Monday while his mother slept in the back seat with a younger child. I'd love to know, even if you're sloshed, how can you be so relaxed that you're going to be asleep in the back seat with another child while an 8-year-old is driving? According to the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department's probable cause statement, the child was seen driving in the wrong direction of traffic at South 4th Street and Walnut Streets. Maybe it's this 8-year-old that I should be denouncing since he doesn't seem to know how to drive the right way. I mean, really? So, LaTonta Mays Gale, I do denounce you. And my advice for you is if you're too drunk to drive, don't let your child drive you home until they're at least 9. I want to denounce Curtis Jack. Curtis Jack is a Georgia man who poisoned a baby with antifreeze. Ugh. This is one of those stories that I couldn't finish reading the article because it made me so upset. And I think it always would have made me upset, but especially being a father and seeing how much my son enjoys his milk and just seeing how innocent a child is. To think that you would intentionally poison a baby with antifreeze, it makes me want to vomit, honestly. And yet, Curtis Jack was convicted of poisoning his newborn baby by adding antifreeze to the child's breast milk bottles. He's been sentenced to 50 years after a jury found him guilty. He was convicted of attempted murder and first-degree child cruelty. While the baby's mother was hospitalized after the baby's birth, Jack picked up bottles of breast milk and delivered them to the child's grandmother, who was caring for the baby while her mother recovered in the hospital. And that's where he was able to poison the breast milk with antifreeze. Curtis Jack, I do denounce you. I must also denounce junk food. I am so glad I was never really into junk food. You know what? I eat more junk food now than I ever did as a child or a teenager. I just grabbed a handful of peanut M&Ms. And, you know, I never really ate candy as either a child or a teen. I eat it, I guess, a little bit because it's here. But I'm stopping. That's it. That handful of peanut M&Ms that I just ate, done. Done, done, done. Why are we denouncing junk food? Junk food in teens has been linked to long-term memory issues. A high-fat, sugary diet during adolescence may cause long-lasting memory impairments. The study found that rats raised on a junk food diet exhibited significant memory deficits that persisted into adulthood despite switching to a healthier diet. Isn't that amazing? So the rats eat all this junk food, and then they switch to regular food. They still can't remember anything. So if you want your rats to have a good memory, don't give them junk food. Junk food, I do denounce you. On a similar vein, I must denounce Nestle. Nestle, the food and beverage giant, has been adding sugar and honey to its infant milk and cereal products in developing countries, but not in European markets. This is incredible. This is a joint investigation, and the Zurich-based watchdog Public Eye and the International Baby Food Action Network sent popular baby food samples in Asia, Latin America, and Africa from Nestle, the world's largest consumer goods corporation, to a testing laboratory in Belgium. And the study examined 150 products sold by the company in low and middle income nations, including best-selling brands Cerelac and Nido. And the results of the testing found that almost all Cerelac wheat-based cereals by Nestle in those regions targeted at infants from 6 months of age contained added sugar equivalent to an average of 4 grams per serving or a sugar cube. The highest volume of sugar added was detected in the Philippines, then Nigeria, then Senegal. Additionally, 7 out of 15 countries did not declare on product labels that sugar was added. Can you imagine? They're adding the sugar to get kids hooked. And at least in 7 of these countries, they're not even labeling it. Nestle, I do denounce you. I must also denounce the lunatic terrorist in Australia that went on a stabbing spree. I'm sure you heard about this, but 6 people were killed and several others injured, including a 9-month-old baby. Oh, goodness. In a mass stabbing at a busy shopping mall. Oh, my goodness. 4 women and a man died at the hospital, and another woman passed away. 4 women and a man died at the shopping mall where the stabbing took place, and another woman passed away at the hospital. She said that 8 people are currently being treated for injuries, including this 9-month-old infant who had to have surgery. Just terrible. Now, thankfully, mass casualty events like this are relatively rare, but as you can see, they do happen. Mass stabber, I do denounce you. I must also denounce the teenager who violently carjacked an Uber driver after she wouldn't let him bring his Yorkie. Horrible. An Uber driver was attacked and carjacked in Washington, D.C., and police say the trouble started when the suspect demanded to bring his pet along for the ride. Teenager attacked his Uber driver, stole her car. Thankfully, he's been arrested and is now behind bars. Nobody should ever do that. You got to respect your Uber driver. You know, I get frustrated when the Uber drivers don't give me a high rating. Can you imagine what this guy's rating is? Nobody's going to pick him up now. They don't want to get a car jacked and have to deal with a dog. So to that teen who did that, he's over the age of 18, so I have no problem naming him. His name is Dax Franco Willis. Dax Franco Willis, I do denounce you. I must also denounce the Cumberland Valley School Board in Pennsylvania. You know, these guys are ridiculous. They invited an actor, Malik Panchaly, to appear at a school in Pennsylvania, Mountain View Middle School, for an assembly. Then they found out that this actor is openly gay. And then these parents launched a petition. Now they're trying to bring him back. But the school district uninvited him. He was invited. He was booked to speak at this rally. Then they said, oh, sorry. He was going to speak against bullying. They said, sorry, we don't want you. Now, parents have started a petition to get him reinstated. There's a petition on change.org. And look, why shouldn't he be? To me, this looks like blatant homophobia and discrimination. So, to the school district that made this decision, I do denounce you. I must also denounce Rafael Alvarez and ATAX. Have you ever had your taxes prepared by someone known as the magician? If so, maybe give those returns another look. I met him. He used to advertise at a radio station that I worked with, and I had a fishy feeling about him back then. This New York tax preparer, Rafael Alvarez, was arrested on charges related to causing substantially more than $100 million in tax losses through the filing of false returns. This is one of the largest tax frauds ever by a tax preparer. I would wonder, when he would do these ads, he would be saying, you're going to get a refund, you're going to get a refund. Well, what if you don't deserve a refund? I guess he was just filing fraudulent returns and having people get a refund that they didn't deserve. So Rafael Alvarez orchestrated this wide-ranging scheme at his Bronx firm, ATAX, New York, to file tens of thousands of federal income tax returns that included false information to reduce the tax liability of their filers. He became known to customers as the magician for his ability to make customers' tax burdens disappear. It's easy to make the tax burdens disappear if you just lie. Anybody can do that. I could do it. Well, actually, I'm not great with paperwork. I probably couldn't do it. So, $100 million in tax losses. Can you imagine? This is one of the largest tax frauds ever by a preparer. Rafael Alvarez, I do denounce you. And I must denounce the U.S. Marshal Service. I hate to do this because I've met a lot of great men, mostly men, with the Marshal Service that are great. But now, federal agents with the Marshal Service are now admitting they made a mistake and the fingerprints don't match after an investigation by ABC 15 in Phoenix, Arizona, found that their mistake led to the false arrest of a Phoenix woman outside her home last month. So the U.S. Marshal Service received confirmation from this fingerprint analysis that Penny McCarthy is not the fugitive Carol Ann Rozak, which is what she was always saying. Carol Ann Rozak was wanted for an outstanding warrant violation in Oklahoma. And McCarthy, who was wrongly arrested, is saying their admission won't stop her request for justice. She says, I want somebody to hold these people accountable. I want this to not happen to more people. I can't blame her. And you have a lot of finger pointing going on here by multiple federal agencies in different states. But 48 hours after a judge dismissed the case, the U.S. Marshal Service provided a statement, but the statement doesn't answer any of the key questions. So they said a preliminary review found federal officials followed proper procedures in good faith reliance on the outstanding warrant and regrets any inconvenience caused by the mistaken identification of Ms. McCarthy. Yeah, I'd call that a big inconvenience. Being wrongfully arrested and saying your fingerprints match that of a fugitive? Yeah, I would certainly say that is pretty inconvenient. We're sorry that happened. Have a nice day. That's it? That's not right. So according to McCarthy, this woman that was arrested, six federal agents arrested her at gunpoint outside her home in Phoenix in March. She said that officers threatened to tase her when she tried to tell them they had the wrong person. She was then transported to prison in Florence and had to spend the night in federal custody before a judge released her the following day pending an identity hearing. Can you imagine how traumatizing that is for somebody that's never been mixed up on the wrong side of the law ever? And at that identity hearing, which was originally scheduled for April 9th, McCarthy was going to have to prove she wasn't Carol Ann Rozak, a wanted fugitive from another state that she'd never even lived in. And this is a mom who's told her children her whole life, be responsible, own your errors. And she said, I no longer have faith in the government that anybody's going to say this is wrong. And federal agents claimed that McCarthy was Rozak, a now 70-year-old woman who was wanted for an outstanding parole violation. But there's no explanation at all as to how this took place. Did they have identical fingerprints? If so, tell us. All right. If you want to comment on anyone I have denounced, be my guest, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. And we will then chat with Debbie Schlussel about movies, Iran, and more. But first, let me say a quick hello to Bob in Brooklyn, who's been holding. Hi, Bob.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for taking me up now. My question is, what is the root of all this problem in the Middle East? The root, real root.
Well,
okay.
Go ahead.
You know how many hours ahead Israel is?
I think nine hours. Okay, this is going to be one of those ones where you're just going to ask the questions and answer them, but okay, go ahead.
No. This is, because I don't really know. You can help me greatly. You know a lot, too. So together we can melt this thing down. You know the Crimea Wars? That was back in when Persia was going strong with the Russians?
Absolutely.
Okay. So they made a movie about that there, the Crimea Wars. And one of them was Charge of the Light Brigade with Errol Flynn. Did you ever see it?
I never did, and I like Errol Flynn. I would probably like the picture.
Captain Blood and Robin Hood. How could you miss Robin Hood, Lady Marin?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, anyway, Russia is 55 miles across from Alaska. Now, Russia was dependent to Seward's Folly, where we got Alaska from Russia.
Right, Seward, but yes.
The Seward's, yeah. They're back up against the Antarctic, 60 to 80 below zero of Russia. Okay, so now they got to come out. And when they sold us Alaska, they really had to come out because they got to get down to the water, not by the Ukraine with the Black Sea, the Red Sea by Israel. And in the movie, they take a break. Two British generals break away from the party with Genghis Khan and the British. And they go down to an office. And they're talking, and one says, no, look here at the map. Russia's starting trouble all over the Middle East looking for a water port. In that movie, made in 1936,
mm-hmm.
I picked that out. I said, wow, that's so pertinent to what's going on. That's the whole thing. Russia is desperate. And then they put all their money in their ships and rockets and bombs.
So, Bob, you think the root of all the problems in the Middle East that we're seeing with Israel and Iran, it's all due to Russia looking for a water port?
All due to Russia not having anything anymore. They don't have any food. Do you know how big the Alaska is? You know size as far as states?
Yeah, it's big. States? It's about 13 states.
Well, you take California, Texas, and Arizona. Okay, you got it. But most of it is barren land and frozen.
All right,
and
so they can't. But and then I do have to break here, Bob, but just tell me quickly,
okay.
Why does Russia's lack of a water port lead to what's going on in the Middle East now?
Well, they can bring their ships in and stuff in and out. They can't eat the oil. That's the whole thing in a nutshell. Where are they going to get their food from? They're surrounded by all the other countries that don't want to bother.
Yeah, I guess I'm still not seeing how that affects Israel and the Palestinian question and Iran and everything else.
Well, why they sold us Alaska, the Crimean War drained them of all their money quick. And they had to sell Alaska to get some money.
Yeah, I guess, again, I'm still not seeing but maybe we're going in a circle here. I'm still not seeing the connection with the Middle East. I can maybe understand how that leads to the issue with Eastern Europe, but I'm not seeing it with the Middle East. Thank you, Bob. I have Debbie Schlussel, the lovely Debbie Schlussel, waiting in the wings, much smarter than I am, so she can educate me on all these areas that I'm deficient in. And she is actually much more well-versed on pop culture than I am as well. She has seen quite a few motion pictures. It's been a few weeks since we spoke, so I am looking forward to getting her take on a number of motion pictures that are out. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
After the hour, this, of course, the Eagles singing about Hotel California. This is a birthday bumper music selection from an old friend of mine going back over 24 years. yeah, about that, 23, 24 years. Lisa Esselstein, although she has aged much better in that time than I have. Happy birthday, Lisa. She's now a creative director at NBC Universal. So I'm glad she's doing well and wishing her the best. Happy birthday to her. And it's always a treat to talk with Debbie Schlussel. Debbie Schlussel is an attorney, a pundit, an all-around interesting person, an opinion leader, a political commentator, but she's also a film critic, and often the worlds of her punditry and film criticism collide with one another. Debbie, it's been way too long since you've been on the program. It's great to have you back.
Thank you. Great to be back. Quite an introduction there.
Debbie, let me begin with the heavier stuff first, and I want to pick your brain on a few items in the news before we get to the movies. Obviously, we're watching what's happening in the Middle East. Israel taking on these Iranian strikes, and apparently strikes in Iraq and possibly Syria of Iranian-backed militias and locations. Give me your take on the whole Middle East situation as it stands now. I think the whole audience knows you're a big supporter of Israel, but as a big supporter of Israel, how do you analyze the situation as it stands?
So I really think that Israel should have responded on the night that all of the Iranian missiles fell. I think they should have done it swiftly. I think they should have gone into Rafah a long time ago, and I think they should finish the job. I think they should have finished the job already. I think the problem is that when you don't have swift and certain response to these kinds of things, it keeps happening and your enemies don't learn to fear and respect you. I think we saw that here in America because Ronald Reagan, who of whom I was a big fan and got to meet and so on, he came into office with our hostages being freed upon his day that he came in. And he never responded. We never bombed Iran. We never did anything. They got to invade and take over our embassy, hold our hostages for over a year, and nothing happened to them. I actually was just texting tonight to my friend Kevin Hermaning, who was a Marine guard at the embassy, who was the youngest hostage there, who was 21 at the time. And he was in there on his day off looking at the plans to guard the embassy the next day, and he was taken hostage. And he said that America should have done something. And the thing is that now finally Israel has bombed Iran. I don't know how extensive it is. It seems very limited and muted, and it doesn't seem like it's anything on the scale of what of the missiles that were sent nonstop by Iran to Israel. I think Ronald Reagan also, we had Hezbollah, which is backed by Iran, target Americans. They blew up our embassy in 1983. Blew up the Marine barracks where our Marines were there protecting the Muslims, allegedly from Israel. And while they were sleeping, they were murdered by Hezbollah. Hezbollah also murdered the Navy diver Robert Dean Steedman. They tortured him to death on a flight TWA-847 because he refused to condemn America and so on, and they had hijacked the plane. They also tortured to death Colonel Rich Higgins of the UN Peacekeeping Force, also an American. So nothing happened when those things happened. And in fact, Ronald Reagan pulled the Marines out of Lebanon, and there was no response. And that is something that Osama bin Laden said when he attacked America, that he saw what happened in Lebanon. We didn't respond. He saw what happened in Somalia. We didn't respond. And I think you have to have a response. It has to be swift and it has to be stronger. It's kind of like the Chicago way in The Untouchables. And, you know, if somebody comes at you with a knife, you have to come at them with a gun and kill a lot more people than they've killed of yours. We need to do that. Israel needs to do that. And I don't think really they've done that.
So a lot of people are going to hear what you're saying in terms of a much, much not only swifter, but a much more aggressive response from Israel towards Iran, and say that's going to lead to an even broader Middle Eastern war with higher gas prices and the risk of a greater conflict, which puts a lot of Israeli lives in danger and potentially down the line, a lot of American lives. What do you say to that, that a kind of grander retaliation would lead to a global conflict that maybe the United States and Israel aren't ready for?
Listen, October 7th happened. Israel clearly wasn't ready for it because they were supposed to have the best border system and the best surveillance and security in the world. And this happened. They were surprised. That was backed by and funded by Iran, which is why Israel struck the so-called embassy of Iran in Syria, because that so-called embassy was actually a military base. And one of the planners of October 7th attacks on Israel by Iran's own admission was there. And so that is when the war started. So is Israel just supposed to sit there and take it and say, oh, well, so what? You invaded our country. You raped and tortured and mass murdered over 1,400 of our citizens. You still have hostages of ours. Iran, you helped plan this. You funded it. But that's okay. We're just going to take it and not do anything. You have to respond. We are the West. You have to respond. I mean, should we have just sat there and taken Pearl Harbor, the Pearl Harbor attacks, and not done anything? Should we have taken the 9/11 attacks and not done anything? I think the 9/11 attacks, the response that we had, unfortunately, was to go into the wrong countries and not to swiftly get at the enemy. We never went after bin Laden until much later, because each time when we saw him, he was with children, and we didn't want to kill children. If you're not going to fight a war like it's a war, you are just going to keep getting hurt more. It's like a neighborhood bully. At one point, and early on is the best point, they have to be stopped. Hamas was not stopped. Israel was attacked by Hamas many, many times over the years, and they didn't do anything. And each time it got worse, and then you saw October 7th, which was way worse than anything that ever happened.
Finish your thought.
So as far as gas prices going up, I don't think that you can attribute gas prices going up to Israel defending itself. For example, Joe Biden is limiting gas exploration in America. He's made it much harder. That's a good part of why gas prices are up. Plus, we have high gas taxes that need to be eliminated. That's not Israel's fault. And Israel has every right to defend herself. And I think also that if Israel had carte blanche to respond swiftly and certainly and get the job done, everything would have been over a long time ago. Israel could have gone into Gaza, done what it needed to do, and this would have been all over. But instead, they've gone in there, tried to do it surgically and so on. They could have killed a lot more people to get all the Hamas people, and they didn't, unfortunately. And I think that's why you have this prolonged thing. And that's why the world has all this fatigue, unfortunately. It's not going to put American lives in danger. It's just going to put more Israeli lives in danger.
Last question about Israel, Debbie, and then I want to pick your brain on a couple items in the news and then talk movies. There were reports that Israel knew about Hamas's attack plan more than a year before it happened. And a lot of people fault Netanyahu and the current government for not being better prepared. Others fault Netanyahu for propping up Hamas to be kind of a bulwark against Fatah in the region. Do you hold Netanyahu responsible for either of those things, either being unprepared when there are reports that the IDF knew this was an attack was in the planning stages a year ago, or propping up Hamas to be a bulwark against Fatah?
So I don't believe that Israel actually knew what exactly was going to happen or any of these plans to a certainty. I think that there are a lot of conspiracy theories going on, and there is a lot of blame going on to Netanyahu because he is conservative. He's considered the right-wing government and so on. When he's really like as conservative as like a Jeb Bush would be, he's kind of more of a centrist. And there are a lot of people more right-wing in Israel, a lot of different parties. You know, I don't believe that he propped up Hamas versus Fatah. I don't think that that's true. I think that that is the claim, again, of a lot of conspiracy theorists and so on. The bottom line is that I don't think anyone knew what was going to happen then, or if they did, this would have been stopped. I think, on the contrary, Israel was asleep at the wheel. To that extent, Netanyahu was the leader when this when October 7th happened, and he does bear responsibility. The fish rots from the head down, and the fish at the top, when this happened, takes responsibility or bears responsibility and some blame. But that said, under many years of Netanyahu, more Israelis have been more safe than they ever have been, and he's the only one that responded to terrorists as much as maybe should have been, except it should have been even more. And unfortunately, I think America has tied Israel's hands. So I don't think this is about Netanyahu. I also think at the time of October 7th, you had nightly protests against Netanyahu by the Israeli left, who didn't want him to be able to appoint Supreme Court justices. You had an Israeli Supreme Court run amok that was crazy liberal, that was ruling against a lot of important security measures, ruling against religious Jews, and so on. And they were protesting nightly. A lot of these people were army people, were military people. And I think the entire country lost its focus on what was important, which is unity and security. And that's, I think, a big reason why this happened.
A lot of people looking what's going on now and saying this is why President Biden shouldn't be president right now and shouldn't be in control of the military and foreign policy. I know you've been critical of Donald Trump, particularly in his post-presidential years, having dinner with anti-Semites and some of the other things that he's been doing. And since we've been talking over the last couple of years, you've said repeatedly that you will not vote for Donald Trump again. Given what's happening on the world stage now, and given the fact that Biden's going to be the Democratic nominee and Trump's going to be the Republican nominee in all likelihood, is there any chance that you might reconsider that and actually end up voting for Trump, given the stakes?
No, I'm not going to vote for either of these people. We have been given horrible choices, and I don't think there's a lesser of two evils. Donald Trump, lately, just the other day, and this has been all over TV in Israel, by the way, he held a rally where he, before his jury selection started, he held a rally where a lot of his supporters were shouting and chanting Genocide Joe, which is the same thing that all these Palestinian protesters who are blocking the streets and blocking highways and airports are chanting Genocide Joe. It is a moniker that is because a lot of the left and these Palestinians believe that Joe Biden is causing genocide because he's allowing Israel to defend itself. And Donald Trump's response to his supporters who were chanting Genocide Joe was, you know, you're not all wrong about that. You're not wrong about that. So that is very scary to me to hear. A former president and possibly a future president say that it's genocide to support Israel and allow it to defend itself. That is very scary to me. And it's not just the dinner with anti-Semites. It's his palling up with and hiring Alex Jones to host his January 6th rally. I'm not talking about what happened at the Capitol. Alex Jones is a guy who said that the Nazis marching on Charlottesville were Jewish actors and not really Nazis. With the Sandy Hook stuff, he particularly targeted the parents, the Jewish parents of victims, when he said that this never happened and so on. These are the kinds of people Donald Trump is hanging out with. He just endorsed a guy who won the North Carolina governor nomination for the GOP who blamed Jews for the problems of the world. I cannot vote for somebody who is an anti-Semite, who mainstreams and enables anti-Semitism, which is now growing in the Republican Party, used to be, and in the conservative movement, it used to be on the fringes and on the sidelines. I can't vote for that. Because you know what? When those people take over the Republican Party and the conservative movement, then where will I go? I'll never vote for these liberal Democrats, but I have to demand more from my side. They're not just going to get my vote.
Well, I can't argue with that. That's really inescapable logic, and it's very sound. And last question I'll ask you about this, though, is a lot of folks are saying, well, especially in your state, Michigan, which is a key swing state and could make the difference in the whole election. They're saying, look, you know, if the logical consequence of you making a statement with your vote is that, look, the reality is it's a binary choice between Biden and Trump. And as bad as Trump is, for all the reasons that you just stated, is Biden worse? And I think a lot of people that may share your concerns about everything you just mentioned may think Biden is worse. So I'll ask you, do you think Biden is worse? And is it worth swallowing your principles on this one to get Biden out of office?
So Biden is very bad. And even worse would be Kamala Harris as president. And we just saw a video the other day of Joe Biden saying that his uncle was eaten by cannibals or something, or could have been.
Right.
I mean, this guy is nuts. I mean, he's lost it completely. On the other hand, I am very worried about what Donald Trump will do, because I think he's lost it too. And I mean, he has given interviews saying that Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian Authority leader, who's also a lifelong terrorist, that he is a father figure and that only one side wanted peace when he was president. It was very obvious to him it was the Palestinians, which they've never shown they wanted peace. That scares me. So I'm not even sure if there is a worse, because I don't know what Trump will do if he gets reelected. I don't know. I do think he's kind of lost it too. And I'm just really disappointed at all these people who handed me this choice on the Republican side. As you know, I really wanted Ron DeSantis. This isn't a matter of voting for the Republican nominee because they're the lesser of two evils. Usually I have done that throughout my life, with a few exceptions. And this is going to be another one of the exceptions. This exception is actually stronger, I think, than the ones I've had in the past. I just don't think there's a lesser of two evils. I think we have two very bad choices. It's very disturbing to me. I don't like what's going on, but no, I'm probably not voting for either of these. I definitely won't vote for Joe Biden, and I absolutely won't vote for Donald Trump.
Fair enough. Debbie, one day we have to schedule a full hour because I want to pick your brain so much on the different items in the news that we're almost out of time to discuss movies. But so let's at least try and mention a couple of quick ones. One, a movie that I'm considering seeing this weekend in IMAX is Civil War. You saw it. It made a lot of money. What'd you think of it?
I thought it was awful. It's long, slow, and boring, and it's a very woke movie. And essentially, you've got this president who's a fascist that they want to get rid of, and you have these various militias fighting him or fighting each other. And, of course, the right-wing militia hates foreigners and shoots and kills them. It's a very graphic, violent movie for no reason. It was pointless. I hated it. And it glorifies these woke left-wing journalists, and I don't believe they deserve glorification, especially these days. Things just get worse with them.
What is this picture? I don't think I've heard of it. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
This is the best movie of the week, and it's the best movie I've seen in a while. This is the new Guy Ritchie movie. It's based on a real story. It's a true life story. Winston Churchill had this band of secret warriors that were kind of misfits and didn't listen to orders. And their job was to take out the two main German U-boats. They had to take those out to clear the ocean for Americans to get there. And also they were using these boats to transport weapons and also to attack. And they had to take them out. It stars Henry Cavill, and it's just a great movie. It's very funny. It's very interesting. If you like Inglourious Basterds, this isn't as good as that, but it's still great. I enjoyed it a lot. They did DEI-ify it, woke-ify it. They have this whole group of black warriors that join. There's no evidence of that. They have a female warrior. She didn't exist in real life. She was actually a secretary who married the main guy. But it's a great story. And at the end of the movie, it's the best part where they show these real life people and what happened to them. And Ian Fleming, the author of the James Bond books, is in this story.
Oh, cool.
And it said he based James Bond on the hero.
Oh, I got to see this. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Debbie, I'm sorry we don't have more time. Let's chat again in a week or two, and we'll slot out a larger portion of the program so that we can cover a wider variety of subjects. Thank you. Have a great Passover.
Thank you.
Thank you. Debbie Schlussel, if you want to comment on any portion of our conversation, be my guest. 800-848-9222. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Come on, Harry, we want to say goodnight to you.
Holding me back, gravity's holding me back. I want you to hold out the palm of your hand. Why don't we leave? Say, and everything gets in the way. Seems you cannot be replaced, and I'm the one who stays.
Harry Styles, a birthday bumper music selection from my old friend Lisa Esselstein, who years ago, well, who knows, there was always a rumor that there was some sort of romantic interaction between the two of you. I'll let the gossip pages be the judge of that. Hey, if you are worried about suffering from Frank Morano withdrawal over the weekend, you must listen to my most recent interview for the Racket Report. My guest is Joe McBratney, the son of James McBratney. And James McBratney is a man that was killed by John Gotti in 1973. I spoke with Joe about how his father's killing really played a pivotal role in John Gotti becoming a larger-than-life organized crime figure.
Knowing that Gotti earned his bones, he got his bones, that's how he got inducted, and that's how he became a made member of the family, by being involved in a murder, which was the murder of my father, which, you know, became my father's history, his legacy. Nobody ever mistreated me or treated me bad. I met a lot of gangsters, and you know what? I asked them stories about my father, and they told me stories, and how he was a likable guy, he was a good guy, tough guy, one of the toughest guys they ever met. But again, you know, it's his memory is of that Gotti was involved in his murder, did 2 years and earned his bones and became the godfather of the most powerful crime family in the world.
It's a fascinating interview and a real eye-opener. So if you haven't listened to it, please subscribe to the Racket Report. You can just search that on any podcast platform, the Racket Report, or just go to redapplepodcastnetwork.com and search the Racket Report, and it comes right up. You can also follow me on Instagram at Morano Vision. You know, I got to learn my lesson in terms of clicking things. I was on Facebook last week, and it said, do you want to link your Instagram and your Facebook page? And I didn't know that that meant that everything I post on Instagram is going to go on Facebook, which is not what I want, because there's some stuff I like just for Instagram. I try to use each of these platforms differently. Now I can't figure out how to unlink it. Maybe I'll just leave it, but If you follow me on Instagram, you'll see the same photos that I post on Facebook at facebook.com/MoranoFan. So be it. Help control the pet population. Get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.